Do you remember how excited I was 36 games ago and, you know, how easily you won me over by saying, no, it'd be good crack, we'll do a podcast. You're such a fucking cunt. Anyway, let's get on with it.
Hi guys, Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left while you were sleeping.
That's all it took. Hey everyone, let's keep it positive. Sure, we're well used to this now by this stage. I was going to come in and just start whinging and complaining, but I thought, what's the point? This is just shite every single night, so we might as well just sit back and enjoy it. Do you know in the last 18 games, Liam, we've lost 9, we've drawn 5, and we've won 4 fucking matches in the last 18. That's 17 points in the last 18 games. That is absolutely incredible. And that is Aston Villa. Do you want to know how bad this season has been? When we're going to record these episodes, I have to just give them a little name title. And sometimes, like today, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not feeling the effort of writing in Crystal Palace 3, Aston Villa 2. So I wrote in shite. And I got a prompt. You already have an episode with that name. Please choose a different name. Somewhere along the way, I've had this exact same feeling and just called an episode shite, and we couldn't do that for today. Yeah, welcome. This is life as an Aston Villa fan now. We all might as well get used to it.
And that's you not starting with a whinge. Talk about a capitulation. And that is the most deserved loss I think I've ever seen. Villa were so bad, no care in possession, no game management, and like delicate little flowers that completely wilted when Palace turned up the heat. It was unbelievable. It was pathetic. It was hard to stomach and a tough hour coming up. Do you remember when Villa had to, all they had to do to win a game was score first? What a fucking turnaround.
Yeah. And like, remember the confidence that you felt at that stage then when they did start scoring first? Because they look so solid. They look like they knew what they were doing. They didn't look like delicate little flowers. And I want to get to that. I want to thrash that out a bit more in WhatsApp wins. We've talked about it before. The mentality, the yellow streak running through these boys. Like that. And I've got a few thoughts on that we'll get to. But basically it boils down to the fact that we shouldn't have brought Jack Grealish on, really, should we? We're 2-1 up. Jack Grealish comes on. Bang, 3-2.
But the goals were coming. The like, Palace were all over Villa. There was a stat that flashed up at one stage. It said 2% in Palace's third. I've never seen that before. I mean, it always brings a smile to your face, or you know, it really grabs your attention whenever one of those digits is a single digit figure. It's unbelievable. 2% in Palace's third in the last 10 minutes. That's disgraceful. It's embarrassing.
Completely retreated into themselves, like physically and mentally and emotionally. Yet again, like we're not again. Like I say, like we're used to this. Let's go through the goals. Or what else can we do? The first time, John McGinn does an absolutely fucking leather the ball as hard as he absolutely can, and he scores a delicious goal. A delicious goal, lovely finish, it's right across the turf. He still got power into it off the post. And what I liked about it most was that he was running away, looking at it because he knew it was going in. Nice finish.
Yeah, it is delicious, you're right, and it's a great finish, and it was one of a number of things that John McGinn did in this match.
We'll probably get to those later. 1-1, I'm going to bring forward two nominations for the Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award for this goal. This is Benteke's goal. The first nomination is Courtney House trying to clear the ball. He's facing out. He's in his own 6-yard box. The ball has just popped up for him to volley it down the field. And he slices it into his own corner where Andros Townsend is standing there waiting to collect the ball. Ball gets shifted across to the other side of the pitch. Palace make their way down the left wing into the box. And then John McGinn tries to use his arse to block out Wilfred Zaha whilst everybody else is playing football. And then Palace run onto the ball and they end up getting the goal. Benteke scores. It's lofted up and Benteke gets over House. I don't blame House in that situation. Like, that's, we know fine well, that's what Benteke does when you set it up for him. But he should have cleared it properly the first time and he wouldn't have been in that position, and then McGinn might have been better served. I don't know. He might have been better served going towards the ball instead of just trying to arse people out of the way playing this different game that he's playing.
Look, John McGinn's arse has gotten Villa into so much trouble this season. It's such a bad habit. It's really destructive. It's ruining his relationships with his fans. Yeah. He has to kick this habit. I know it's great fun, but it gets to the stage when you're having a little sneaky arse in your own box. It's gone too far. And sure, have the odd arse at a wedding every year, but you can't just be doing it every weekend. Just lining up arse after arse all day on a Saturday afternoon. He needs to stop hanging out with people like Alan midweek, fucking enablers. No man, come on, keep arsing. Look how much fun it is. Have another one. That Everton game was the worst thing that could possibly have happened to John McGinn. You're in your own box. Go to the fucking football.
It was bizarre. It was bizarre. I think that's probably worse than the Howes one, because Howes just tried to clear it and fucked it up, but he fucked it up big time. I've never seen a ball miss hit as badly as that. 2-1, the Ollie Watkins assist, that, I don't know if it's going to be remembered forever and talked about forever like it should be, but there'll be an underground that will appreciate that forever. He has a look, sees where Lagazzi is, gets the back of his head to it, flicks it back to him whilst there's three Palace defenders coming around him, and there it is, just onto Lagazzi's right foot. And sure, we know what happens when that happens.
Yeah, and McGinn does really well down the wing. I mean, when he knocked it past Mitchell, he had him exactly where he wanted him. McGinn is between ball and man, and he could have just started shaking it out, backing it up. But he kept on some of his feet this time. He kept it PG. And it's a lovely, controlled finish from El Ghazi. But what more can we say about Ollie Watkins? That pass is just out of this world. It's ridiculous. It's so clever, so clinical, and so easy for a man of his class.
And then did you see the header that he just teed up for El Ghazi again, moments later? Ballooned ball down pitch, just dropping onto his head, like concrete dropping off the Empire State Building. And he's got a cushioned head. We talk about this, and he jumps into the air. So it's like, you're thinking, how could he possibly get so much control? His first touch of his head is off the charts, and he jumps up to meet the ball and props it up on a cushion for El Ghazi, who decides to shoot from 40 yards. But, it's just the skill he has with that noggin is frightening. I don't know if there's anybody better. And it was night and day seeing him back, wasn't it? There was one stage where Matt Target was sprinting to the sideline to keep the ball in play, and just has to lamp it down the pitch when he's getting there because he's just trying to stop it from going out. And just Watkins just taken off, peeled off the defender's shoulders into the channel, wins the ball. He just reads every single situation, and he's there before everybody else. It's phenomenal what he brings. And I'm almost embarrassed for Ollie Watkins on nights like that, because it's one of those ones where I think, Jesus, why would he hang around with these clowns for too long? Because he's at a level above most of these boys.
Oh yeah, he's a level above all the forward players from the back four up, apart from Jack Grealish. He's absolutely out of this world. His movement, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. It's incredible. Not only is it so clever, you're right, he creates situations just from his movement. Either that's just chasing balls down, or it's giving Matt Target the perfect out ball, the perfect option. And his touch whenever the ball comes to him is just, if you've got that movement and that touch combined, then defenders can't do anything about it. Because even if they do get close to you, which is very unlikely because his movement is so good, it doesn't matter because his touch is then just so good that it takes them out of the game anyway. The one to El Ghazi, you're right to call it out. It's absolutely ridiculous. The one that Ghazi decided to spank from 40 yards before his body was set and before the ball had dropped appropriately. I mean, the ball is, it must have been 60 metres in the air. Yeah. Never mind controlling the ball, to not roll over in pain after that hit off your head is so admirable. He's unbelievable.
So when Villa conceded the equaliser at 1-1, they picked it up again. They were class to start off with. Shit, conceded the goal. Class again. Ended the half really well after scoring in the 34th minute. Started off the first 2-3 minutes of the second half really well. And then just like their season just fell off that cliff that we've referenced far too often now. But the second goal, the second equalizer for Crystal Palace, I think Konsa lets Saha onto his right far too easy. Boys are saying he's giving him too much space. I don't know. Like, that's how you can get rinsed too easily as well, by diving in. They were saying he needs to be sprinting out. Like, I can see why he was cautious going out. Like, Elmo's coming in behind him. He just needs to show him the line there, like what Konsa normally does. And it wasn't like Konsa that, like, Zaha didn't look particularly sharp. He didn't do anything. He didn't produce any piece of skill. He just moved on to his right. Had a shot and it deflected in. Like, it's so annoying because Villa has started to get so bad that I just started to engage in a bit of Photoshop work, and I put together this lovely picture of Elmo with Zaha in his pocket, thinking, oh, this will go well after Villa won't win. Like, everybody will be buzzing about this. Elmo's doing well. Zaha's anonymous. And yeah, he just gets a goal too easily in the end.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Konsa has to get out to him quicker is bollocks. So we can just forget about that. It's Wilfried Zaha. He's the only player on the pitch that you don't go out to. Konsa's body position is all wrong, though. You know your opposition, and it's Crystal Palace. You only have to remember two things. Benteke's good in the air, and Zaha is good on his right. I mean, if that's the shape that Konsa is deciding to take, he has to be a yard further from his own byline. He has to make the line irresistible to Zaha, even on his left. He has to essentially show him the front post, because that's not where the danger is. The danger is on Zaha's right foot, and Konsa's facing that way as well. So he's got an extra yard to go. It doesn't matter if he's given Zaha that space, he'll get there on his right foot. But whenever he's that far advanced towards his own net, Zaha's just going to cut inside every day, because Konsa can't react. He has to turn his whole body around. Zaha's just shifting to the right. He's always going to win that race to the ball. Yeah.
The third goal was absolute dog shit, but it's emblematic of what happens to a team who just cower in their own box and hope that somebody somewhere will save them. Like, it doesn't happen. Like, you just all start panicking, and perhaps the Ramsey attempt at clearance summed that up. Like, there's your number 10 in the box. Pathetic clearance. Gets it out to Eze. Like, oh my, like, let's do a bit on Eze. Like, this guy is overrated. Like, his pass to Zaha, like, was absolutely fine. He just played the ball down the left to somebody who's completely free. And that's gone down in his assists now. This is where Michael Owen's point stands when he put that tweet out about people rating assists as highly as goals. He's saying, like, one, he's probably wrong with his stats. Wouldn't be like Michael Owen. But he's saying one in every 10 is probably a really good assist that's created the goal. And he's talking about things like that then, when somebody just rolled it to a free player on the run, who still has to take it past somebody, give the deflection to score, as he gets an assist for it. Then he completely mishits the ball for this one. Like, Ramsey's just shit clearance. It's bounced out. As he completely, like, scuffs it, it bounces onto the ground before it gets to Mitchell. And Mitchell just shoulders it, arms it in. And that's a second assist for Eze. And now they're talking about him afterwards, after he turns in. Honestly, a performance that had me texting somebody. I don't want to sound like Eamon Dunphy, but I was like, this guy is, he's a fraud. Like, what is all the talk about him about? Like, Zaha was bad enough, and I thought this guy was even worse. But he's gone away with two assists, and that's all Sky need.
Well, you definitely do sound like Eamon Dunphy, because Crystal Palace absolutely dominated that game, and Eze was playing centre midfield for them. I thought Eze was really, really effective. He was first to every ball.
He was shite.
He was aggressive when he got it. He was running at Villa. They were shitting themselves. He got two assists. And, like, Eze is a centre midfielder, and he's only 22. He's going to be a very good footballer. I would take him in a fucking second in the Aston Villa team without a shadow of a doubt. If he was in Villa's squad, we'd be a much, much better squad. The goal, the Mitchell goal, it's an absolute disaster from Villa. There's not a wick. I mean, McGinn, Elmo, Martinez, they can all do better for that. I mean, he's fucking shouldered the ball in from a yard out, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Like, McGinn doesn't even get off the ground when he's trying to header it. Elmo's just watching all this develop. And Martinez, so surprising that he's not more decisive there. He should just come out and clean out Elmo and Mitchell. It's a terrible goal to lose a game with.
And yeah, it probably just summed up that game and what Villa deserved as well, to lose a game with that shit. And, like, if it wasn't that goal, it would have been another one. It was coming. Like, and I'm just surprised it didn't come sooner. And to that end, we'll go to WhatsApp whinges. Aston Villa need to urgently buy some big characters immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I touched on this at the start of the show. It's unbelievable how much they wilted there. And maybe there's something to be said about the fact that they've given up on their season. But like you said 2 weeks ago, a lot of these boys can't fucking afford to do that.
Yeah.
Like, not if the boys, not if the lads in the boardroom are being serious about progressing Villa, because everybody, apart from Watkins and Grealish, can be replaced in this team at not too great an expense. It would be absolutely ridiculous to try to replace Grealish and Watkins, because you'd have to spend hundreds of millions. Everybody else is there for the taking.
And do you know what else I said a few weeks ago? Far be it from me to chime back to say I was right. But, like, they gave it up in their season. How long ago did they give up on their season? Like, there's giving up on your season and then there's winning 4 matches in the last 18. Like, that is fucking disgraceful, carry on. Like, they should all be sacked because of that. Like, they've lost 9 of their last 18 matches. Villa have played 36 games. So did they basically, after 18 matches, say, yeah, that's it. Done. Job done. Sorted. Like, it's a scandal what's going on. Like, I don't really want to buy that because this has been going on for so long. I don't think Villa on the beach is a proper excuse. Like this is going to be the majority of their season probably by the time it's finished. And it's just it's soul destroying. And like, yeah, like the stats are like they're the youngest team average age wise. So that sort of shows you that they need some big characters. I think very early on the season we said, imagine dropping a Martin Larsson or a Gareth Barry into this team. Now it's exactly what they need. And, you know, we know how they buckle when they go behind. We know how they flounder when they concede. And they just don't have anybody to stop the rot. Like, to decide we've only had 2% of the ball in the opposition third. Let's actually try and address that. There's nobody there taking the lead and taking command. And there hasn't been anybody there. Well, especially since Grealish went.
Yeah, and to think that, you know, John McGinn was given the captain's armband today, and I've given out a few times, a fair few times, about Jose Mourinho's man management and motivational skills, about his only approach being to publicly call his players shit. And now I'm remembering why. Because it doesn't work. I mean, I've been calling McGinn shit all year, but it's not having the desired effect. It's not cutting through. I'm not getting the response that I want. I mean, that display was so erratic. Kicking the ball out of play, scoring screamers, kicking the ball to Palace players, having key involvements for Villa and Palace goals, yeah. Reading the play brilliantly to win the ball back, or pegging it up the field out of position before we've got the ball back. It was all over the place, and he just allowed Palace back into the game.
Actually, that brings me on to talk about Dougie very quickly. I was going to chat about him later, but like, I thought Dougie was better today, right? He was much, much better. He was relatively way better. There was a stage where I was thinking, yeah, this is the holding midfielder I can get on board with. But once again, right, when you look at the context of the whole match and just how little control Villa had, it comes back to the centre midfielders. Like, who is grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck? Where is the consistency in the play? Like, yeah, like, you're right to talk about McGinn being erratic, and this is why for both of these players, they're so divisive amongst the fans. Like, did you see that social media post yesterday? I think Aston Villa just said Douglas Luiz got called up to the Brazil squad. Now, I don't know if a lot of fans had missed that Douglas Luiz has been starting for Brazil for a good while now, but they're using this now as, and some of our fans think it's shit. He's playing with Brazil now. Do you know? And it's the same with McGinn. Like, you know, some people call McGinn man of the match the last day when he was shit. Or, like, and this happens a lot. It's because they're so erratic. And you can't have centre midfielders who are erratic. Like, they have to be the one true constant in your team. And especially when things are going bad, like, get them the ball and we'll work it from there. But too often they disappear, and too often they're trying something spectacular, or they're running up the pitch off the shoulder. Like, you know, they just need to be there to tell everybody to calm down, get me the ball, we'll keep possession here for 2 minutes, we'll knock them back, and then we'll start again. Yeah. It's never like that. It's always too quick and, yeah, looking for those majors all the time.
Yeah, they're pinball players. You know, they're all over the place. They're sunshine players as well. That's the other thing. I mean, when Villa are playing well, whenever Palace haven't started yet, they look great. Because, and that again is the thing that's really frustrating, because they can be great. But just touching on Dougie in Brazil, I mean, congratulations. He's playing international football. I mean, international football is, apart from the top eight teams in the world, it's championship football. Yeah. It's not a high standard at all. I mean, all the best players come from a handful of countries. So if Brazil just don't happen to have any midfielders, which they don't, Dougie will get called in. I mean, who's next on their list? Fred? Who gives a fuck? Brazil are clearly shit.
It's the best thing that Roy Keane said when they were having that discussion about Spurs, and Jamie Redknapp, of course, was trying to validate all the players in the Spurs team by saying, he's an international. And Keane said, like, if you're not an international footballer these days, you are a bad player. And like, that's true. Like, you know, yeah, fair enough. It's going to be hard to make the as you say, France team, the England team, whatever. Like, it's, but most countries in the world, if you're not playing for them, you're doing something really wrong.
Yeah, if you're playing in the Premier League, you should be playing for your fucking country. You should be at least being talked about, or you should be like Matty Cash, and you're just unfortunate that there's six other right backs ahead of you. You know, to not be getting into the Brazil midfield for somebody who we were talking about being worried about Man City taking him back at the start of the year, he would have to be doing something really, really badly wrong.
Second WhatsApp one, Villa are going to find the transition back to fans the hardest out of any team. Like, this would have ended 6-2 if Selhurst Park was absolutely packed today. And I actually, I had this thought at 2-1 up. Like, I was thinking, gee, like, remember the Leicester game? The Leicester game was such a sliding doors moment when Tim Sherwood was in charge. Villa went 2-0 up, screamer from Carlos Gil and screamer from Jack Grealish. And then Lescott, I remember Lescott made a balls up, and it was 2-1. And suddenly Villa were under pressure. They were at Leicester Stadium, and the fans were up for it, and Villa shat themselves. And Leicester scored again, and Leicester scored again. It's like the fans just literally sucked the ball into the net and sucked Villa further and further back. And Leicester went on and won the league, and Villa went on and got relegated. And Villa were amazing in that game. But then because Sherwood was so stupid, like, he ended up changing their formation and the team yet again. Like, he did that far too often to start that season. And that always just summed up to me, like, the importance of a crowd sometimes, like, but not for the home team, but for the away team and how much you can get on them. Like, imagine, like, you called those boys delicate little flowers. Imagine them there with 40,000 Londoners just roaring and shouting and putting them off and laughing at them, ironically cheering, you know, like, cheering on the other team to get them up. Like, those boys would collapse. 6-2 is not an exaggeration. That's what I think it would have been with fans.
Yeah, I remember that game so well. Tim Sherwood bamboozled himself that day. It was unbelievable. And the King Power Stadium, that day and that whole season, it was unbelievable. The atmosphere, the noise coming from it. I mean, you can really easily forget with a fake noise how much of a difference fans actually make in a stadium. Yeah. That day was unbelievable. I had to turn down the TV. It was so loud. And they were like that all season. So I don't think Villa were the only team to be caught out by that. But you're right, they did. They wilted under that pressure as well. And
I just always thought, what would have happened to Leicester if Villa had just saw that out and won 2-0?
Yeah, and because Leicester obviously nearly got relegated the year before. They weren't exactly, you know, killing teams at that stage. They had a fairly erratic start to the season. I think that was the turning point. But yeah, and Crystal Palace as well. Yeah, their stadium has always got a great atmosphere, and Villa could easily have just completely. Like, I mean, the passes that Villa were kicking out of play tonight, the ironic cheers would have lifted the roof off the stadium. They would have been so loud because it happens so often. I mean, that John McGinn right footed volley that he tried to play out, like, what the fuck was that? He's trying to play that out to Matt Target, who has about four Palace players in front of him anyway. Yeah. And he just drills it straight into the stand. It was really impressive he got it so far.
And it's just like they're that deep and that cowardly, I will say, when there's no fans. And they can hear Dean Smith. Like, we can all hear Dean Smith sitting at home. Like, his voice is booming across the pitch all the time. He's roaring and shouting at them to get up the pitch. He's giving them instructions. They're not going to fucking hear him as easily next season. I am worried. Like, unless, like, this sort of ties back into the first whinge. Is like, unless they add in some big characters there, not just from a mental standpoint, like a leadership standpoint, but somebody with a bit of balls to take the ball and get them up the pitch again, or take control of the game, take the sting out of it. Like, they're going to really suffer under that pressure with fans.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And yeah, Dean Smith can't just hold up a whiteboard all season next year saying, toughen up. They do need help in there. They absolutely, they need midfielders, and they need somebody. They just need a bit of calmness on the ball. And Dougie and McGinn aren't your men for that. Yeah. They're great. If you have somebody who is calm on the ball, then they're absolutely perfect to play with that person, because they will keep moving to take the ball off that person. And that's what you need. But they're just... Ah, they're all over the place.
Last one. How the fuck does he win every fucking header?
Yeah, look. How much more can we say about old 50p head? It's an absolute lottery when you pick him out in the box. Or when everyone's in his own box.
Courtney Howes, for anybody who's lost on this.
I don't think anybody would have been lost on that. I mean, like, unless that guy's 6 inches out, which he was in the reverse fixture, he's going to miss. And even then, the ball only went about 6 inches over the line.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, yeah, what do you want to happen here? Because, you know, put your money on anything, because anything can happen.
It's incredible. Like, some nice corners that were going in, and he was just getting on the end of them again. And I actually thought, after the first miss, I thought, oh, good. Jesus, it's just like absence make the heart grow fonder. I thought, oh, right, House is here. At least somebody's here to win headers. And then it was like, oh, yeah, I remember he wins the headers and clears it for the other team. That's the problem with him. But we'll talk about him in the Ronnie Rosenthal Award. See you there.
We've got incredible arses.
The face on some of those lads, like McNeil, Wood. Like, Wood looks like a big a big GA midfielder, doesn't he?
McGinn will use his arse in every scenario. He actually played a blind arse early on in the first half.
Does anyone sweat more than Ross Barkley? It actually looked like he was going for showers regularly during the game. What the fuck is wrong with you?
John Walters' arch has never let me down, though. John McGinn's has let me down several occasions this season.
He was drenched. Like, absolutely soaking. We don't care about
no government warning. El Ghazi is too prone to bad runs of form. He had a bit of crack in December and he was due a bad run. He's too patchy. He's too streaky. And that performance was the equivalent of a streak of shit in the toilets of a fucking bus station.
Into somebody else's bosom. Bosom of possession, I mean. You know, like a bosom of possession, I mean. Some award categories on another fantastic night to support Aston Villa. It's so dark supporting Aston Villa now that we always just assumed they're playing at night time when it was 12 o'clock during the day.
Do you remember how excited I was 36 games ago, and you know how easily you won me over by saying, no, it'll be good crack, we'll do a podcast. You're such a fucking cunt. Anyway, let's get on with it.
And he never forgave him. The Ronnie Rosenthal Award, let's fucking go. This is stacked. Jacob Ramsey, Ollie Watkins pulls it back for him. Doesn't put it away. Has to put it away. We've been tough on Davis about stuff like this. You know, you want to be the man, you have to start delivering, and didn't deliver.
Yeah, I mean, this was on all day. Everyone could see it developing. It was a classic Villa move round the corner, over the top from Target to Ollie. And Ramsey's not followed, obviously, because we were playing Palace. And the finish is so lacking in conviction. And I think he's done the right thing trying to place it, because he's free. He's on the edge of the box with all the time in the world. But even his run lacked conviction. It just lacked nous. He needed to hold it for a second. And the Palace defenders are at sea. They're sprinting back. Give yourself that extra yard. You don't have to run as hard as they are. Yeah. Just wait. And you can see then the pass is more difficult for Ollie Watkins and it ends up under Ramsey's feet and the shot is just shit.
Yes, tame. Second and third nomination. Bertrand Traore, corner to house. Bertrand Traore, corner to house.
Unbelievable.
First one wide. First one over, second one wide. First one front post, second one back post. Take your pick. House will just do what he does best and get rid of it.
And Villa were so much on top as well at this stage. And I was just, you know, having glorious flashbacks of the first day we played Palace. And I wasn't that concerned about it. I was like, ah, we can afford for House to be missing. That's grand. We don't need him in this game. We're going to destroy Palace. Call that one right.
Fourth nomination. This chance wasn't really a Rosenthal miss, but I wanted to mention the build-up to it. Watkins, the one that he drew a decent save from Butland, it's up high, he's shot in the turn, it's a great shot, like, you know, from where he is, it's vicious, like, Butland has to react, and he does, hits it out for a corner that Hoyce probably hits out for a goal kick, but El Ghazi is the one who starts this, he's gone down the left, nice pass from target again, and he needs to find Ramsey, like, Ramsey is there, yeah. El Ghazi's looking at him, like, it's not even that far a pullback, it's a tiny little of an angle, they pull it back, and he looks at him, and he's aiming for him as well, and he just doesn't find him. It's just such a bad pass. But like Palace make a Hames of the clearance, and that gives Watkins the chance. But like just a bit more composure and accuracy there from El Ghazi, and like Ramsey misses. That's all he has to do. just tee up.
Yeah, and El Ghazi, he absolutely drills it as well. So even if it does get to to Ramsey, he's not giving him a great opportunity to score. And there's so much space. He doesn't have to put that much power on the cross. And El Ghazi, yeah, it's on his left foot. But, you know, you're playing on the left wing, pal. You know, start practicing on that left of yours because it's not good enough. Yeah. That was just completely wayward and overhit. Bertie T, when it comes to him, he does so well. That pass that Bertrand Traore can play that no one knows it's coming. Nobody else on the pitch, not even the receiver, is expecting it. He just disguises it with his body so well. And he did it about three or four times in the first 15 minutes of that game. And it's nearly always first time as well. It's so, so nice. But he is so, so shit some days.
Well, I'm going to get to Bertrand Traore, don't you fucking worry. El Ghazi again, like you mentioned, yeah, on his left, there were a couple of really bad crosses from him that were very simple, actually, and he just didn't deliver on them. But this one was when he just didn't play Watkins in on the left-hand side of the box. Instead, decides to just run into someone instead. I think it was 3-on-2. Might have been 3-on-3, but Watkins had peeled off. It would be a very tough finish for Watkins, but give him the ball and let him have a shot of his left foot. And instead, like, he lets him run past him, lets him go on down the line, and he just cuts inside, and he doesn't try to produce any bit of trickery or feint. He just runs into someone until they take the ball off him, and I think that's his strategy. It's like, he just hopes that he can get by someone by changing his direction. He's not trying to disguise anything. He just turns and hopes that it goes by, and in that case, it didn't. There was a defender there, and they took it off you.
Yeah, he's the exact opposite of Bertrand Traore. It's all too obvious. It's all too just get it onto my foot so I can spank it and get it on there as quickly as possible with as little fuss as possible, even if that means someone just running out with the ball.
Fifth one, Keenan Davis's clearance from target's cross.
I mean, Jack Grealish does everything you want there. He calms the whole situation down. It's the last minute. It's exactly when you expect everybody to panic. He calms it down. He gets Target the extra yard because he draws out a defender. And Target does exactly what Jack wants him to do then. He's bottom the yard. Now you deliver Target. And Target delivers right to his man. And his man misses the fucking ball. I mean, it's the last minute of the game. You can't be shouldering the ball over the bar. Nah. You're a centre forward. You've been brought on exactly for this situation. This is what Dean Smith had in his mind. We're going to go two up top. We're going to get the ball wide and we're going to whip it into the big lads.
And last one, before I tell you which one I think should win, is Konza doing his best house impression at the end.
It is unbelievable. Like I said, Davis was the last minute, then Konza was the last second. To get those two chances and to not even get close to scoring, I mean, those two headers weren't even related to scoring. You know, they weren't even a first cousin of a shot on target. It's scandalous.
And that is why I want Davis to win this, right? Because I think he sums up the problem. Right? There are a lot of nominations here in the Ronnie Rosenthal Award, but I bet everybody listening is thinking, like, fucking Villa had no chances. Like, I thought the same. Like, and they didn't. They only didn't because the players were so shit with the chances. And like you say, Davis made that look so far away from a chance that you might not even think about it now. But like, that's a fucking goal. A striker puts that away. He's got a header 6 yards out. And he's done his best to just put everybody off the scent to think that was a big chance for Aston Villa. Nobody comes away thinking they deserved anything from it. And that makes me so angry. And I think that sums up most of these chances. That it's just a team line with no conviction. And they didn't make any of them look like big efforts or big opportunities in the game.
Yeah, he's free. He's on the 6 yard box. And rather than score the goal, he lets the ball hit off him. I mean, that's what he did. He just got into the position and then just let target kick the ball off him. Have a bit of fucking self-respect.
Sorry. The Peter Inkerman What the Fuck Award. So we mentioned McGinn's arson in his own box. He's going to do well to beat that. We mentioned House's clearance. So there are two nominations. McGinn's up and under in the center circle. He's just trying to volley it across the pitch. Like, you could have picked out that one you're talking about with his right foot as well, but this one he tries to volley it across the pitch, I assume to target, and it just goes 50 feet in the air and it goes 5 feet to the left, and Palace break away. And every time something like this happens, like, you just have to keep remembering this is Villa's midfield. Not only should you expect better, you expect them to keep control and dominate the match when they have the ball, but every time they do something like that, they leave themselves wide open. They leave House and Konza fucking stranded at sea. And like, there it is, McGinn's just trying to play it across and just balloons it into there.
Like, I was just about to make an analogy about him playing like an out half in rugby, but that is just so disrespectful to out halves. I mean, like, all those two moments are just all the composure of a fucking hooker getting the ball tossed back to him in rugby. Like, it was dreadful stuff. Just get the ball down and pass it to a Villa player. There's 10 of them on the pitch with you. Pick one of them out.
Nomination for the referee. How's getting a yellow card for taking the ball off Zaha?
Oh, that was so bad. I mean, Zaha was right to try to target House, and he got the better of him a few times, but for that to be a booking was just absolutely silly. House does it perfectly. He gets his body in between the two of them.
He cons it.
He did exactly that. And then Zaha kind of stumbles into the back of him and brings the two of them down.
Yeah.
It's a terrible decision.
Terrible decision. And then the last nomination for the Peter Inkerman What the Fuck Award. Bertrand Traoré. What the fuck? What's that?
Oh, he's a mess.
Just like this. Like, I don't know. Like, you're right. First 15 minutes, he did a couple of nice things. But, like, this burger needed cooking for a lot longer tonight. Like, it was nowhere. Like, I felt like he needed 280 minutes to get the grill going. Like, you know, he was just, oh, I don't know what he was doing. Everything he did was undercooked, and everything he did was unpredictable again, and careless. I just thought it was careless again, and just so many times, like, even the one he played back to Elmo first time, like, he's just joined it, the ball comes to him, and Elmo's in the worst position out of everybody in the Villa team because Zaha's right beside him, and Traoré just thinks this will be fun to first time it back to Elmo because it's a tough pass to make, and you're right, it's a tough pass because he's being marked, and it was just that. The whole game from Bertrand Traoré. That's why there's not one specific moment. Just his performance is nominated for this award.
Yeah, he was really bad. And this is the really, really tricky thing for, you know, any Moneyball people out there. Because you look over the season, for wingers, Traore and El Ghazi have a lot of goals and assists. Well, El Ghazi doesn't have any assists, but he's got a lot of goals. But it's the other 30 games. They're so, so bad in those games that they're doing nothing for the team. They're not creating dangerous opportunities. They're not being decisive enough, and they're absolute liabilities. I mean, Bertrand Traore puts through the opposition players so often that it's unbelievable. And Elmo just didn't know what to do there. He just drills the ball off the guy. That's all he can do because he's being closed down. It was like, even after the third replay, I couldn't figure out what he was doing. Where's Dougie going as well, though? Like, why is Dougie just sprinting up? I know his winger's got the ball at his feet, and he's not expecting him to do that, but he's just sprinting out of position.
Yeah.
He's sprinting out to the wing. Just let Elmo go there, if anything. Dougie just doesn't have to just leave a big gaping hole in the middle of the pit. It's not Dougie's fault. It's fucking Bertrand Traore's the problem. But it's just a mess. And even Elmo panics as well. But of course he panics. He's being closed down. But, you know, I don't think Elmo needed to just drill that.
And this is the interesting one, right? Remember last week we were talking about, or Thursday night, talking about stats. And this idea that, like, you know, people have now that they, instead of just watching a match, they just find some numbers and they tweet that out. And then that is now the verification that everybody needs. Like, this is now the argument that we're going to be using to put forward. Take Bertrand Traore's performance tonight, right? Now, look, again, I am not against stats. I'm against stats solely judging somebody's performance. And I'm against four stats solely judging somebody's performance. And some of these stats aren't even clear. Like we mentioned before, Ross Barkley, 100% dribbles, and it's one dribble. You know, 100% sounds fucking great. And we don't even know what the qualification is for a dribble. Like, what is the measurement there? Does he have to dribble 5 meters? Does he have to take a pass somebody? Like, what is a dribble? Like, nobody knows that, but they just need something need somewhere to plant their flag, and these tweets give it to them. So I don't think there's anybody tonight who would disagree that Bertrand Traore was bad. But you could come away from that game, and I could devise one of these tweets. Now, I'm not going to do it because there'd be too many people that latch onto it. So I could put it out. I could put down Bertrand Traore versus Crystal Palace. Minutes played, whatever it was, 82 or whatever. Passes an opposition third. I could put it. I'm sure that sounds decent. Like, I'm sure that there's a decent number there because he's found Watkins a couple of times. Dribbles past a man. I'm sure he's got a few of those as well. But again, this is the thing with these tweets. Nobody knows what the relative is as well. So if I have four successful dribbles in there, nobody knows if that's good or bad. Runs back to help out fullback. 7. Again, nobody has a fucking clue what that means. Successful corners, 2, or 100% or whatever, you know, looked fucking amazing. But Bertrand Traore was not good tonight, so yet again, just be careful. I could take Villa's worst player today and devise one of these tweets and put together a collection of stats that might look good and do not show the proper picture. Just like you're saying there, Moneyball people need to be careful. Like, stats are obviously good and obviously important, but look at the game first. Always look at the game. Always watch the game. That's my advice.
Yeah, and no, you're right. And every statistic nowadays has an agenda, and that's what happens whenever there's so many statistics that are out there.
Yeah.
But people just rely on them as well. People can't rely on their own intellect to look at a game, so they're just looking for stats to verify, to make it sound like they're more intelligent. I mean, yeah, dribbles. A dribble can just be running past a fullback who's closed off the space for you, and you're just barreling it back to your own fullback after that.
Exactly, yeah.
And Bertrand Traore had 4 key passes tonight that I can remember. The maximum amount of key passes ordinarily in a game is about 4 or 5. Yeah. So he's probably the top Villa player. But he was fucking dreadful. He had about 3 key passes for Palace as well. There's no stat for that.
And in fairness, I haven't seen this stat, but I'm expecting it to come out of some stage. The way you see heat maps as well, like people share on heat maps as if it means anything. Like, do you know, oh look, he was on the pitch. Yes, Everybody was on the pitch. They all have a similar heat map. They were playing football. Like, so runs back to help out a fullback. Now, in fairness, I haven't seen that one yet. But what's he doing when he gets back there? Like, it might look good if I say he's run back 11 times to help out Elmo, and it probably means they didn't run back an hour 20 times. But he ran back and then watched Elmo getting skinned, or watched Elmo pick up his man, or, you know, or played one of those first-time passes to Elmo who wasn't expecting it and wasn't in the position. Like, again, we need the context for these stats. Stats are good, but they help inform the context.
And, like, even things like, you know, kilometers covered, there's obviously a base level that every professional footballer should be covering in 90 minutes. Because you could rack up a fair fucking amount of kilometers covered if you're just losing the ball in the corner flag and then having to sprint back to the other corner flag. So why did you cover those kilometers? That's the question.
But I think John McGinn's arse wins this award.
Yeah, fuck that.
You let Glenn Whelan take a 90th minute penalty award. I only have one nomination. Actually playing the three strikers up top. Did he think we were being fucking serious?
Yeah, I mean, just add Dean Smith to the list of people who are listening to this podcast. But, you know, Dean Smith clearly doesn't understand our sense of humor. That wasn't a suggestion, Dean. That was me taking the piss. Watkins, Davis, and Wesley up top.
Yeah,
get a grip, mate.
Grealish playing off them. Like, not only were they up top, they were all in the box, like we had said. We were only having a bit of crack, Dean. Like, if you are listening, don't do that again. Because, like, you know, you don't need to do that against Palace. Like, just play Grealish on the left or play him in number 10. Play Watkins, play Davis, but, you know, play somebody up alongside Watkins if you want an extra body up there, and play through them. Don't put the three boys in the box and play Grealish at number 10 and start lumping the ball up, and we've got no midfield or no wingers or nothing anymore. Like, I think that actually just handed over the game to Palace in the end, because it was like, all we were relying on were those set pieces where the boys were definitely going to miss. You know, like, we had that one good move then, in fairness, but that was all Grealish. But just create those moments over and over. We don't need the three boys standing in the box for them to help.
And, like, I know Bertrand Traore had to come off, but that game was calling out for Grealish to come on at number 10. Like, Palace were only playing two midfielders as well. If you wanted to wrestle control back into that game, you had to have Grealish on the ball. You had to get him involved in the game. Bringing him on and tossing him out to the left wing. Left wing was fucking irrelevant. Like, Dougie and McGinn and Grealish could have been able to control that game, but we just let it drift. We just wasted Jack Grealish.
Yeah, it felt that way. The Vyman meter, I'm going to do some people going up first. Ollie Watkins, just amazing, like, what he brings to the team. The way he gets off the shoulder, the way, like, we talked about him loads. It seems like, even though we seem to be covering a lot of the same ground when we talk about Watkins, there's always something new to point out, or something added to his game. It's just, like, the energy, the intelligence, the control, even that one that he worked with Bertrand Traore. Like, it's his run initially down the channel, wins the ball, gets it back to Traore, who plays a nice ball through, but it's because Watkins goes again and just leaves the defender for dead, and he's waiting for a proper opening. Nobody's getting themselves free, so he tries to go back post. It was the right decision, but Butland just cut it out as he tried to lift it. But he's just dangerous. Like, that's what he is. He's just danger. And they've got him going up alongside two ones. I don't know if you agree with him, but El Mohammedi, I think we all would have been a bit concerned tonight with him starting. Especially with Zaha and what Zaha can do on some days. But I thought Zaha wasn't great, and I think Elmo did really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that you probably picked out the worst thing that Watkins did in that match to describe how good he was. I actually think he could have played that a lot earlier. I think Ramsey was free on the penalty spot. And the cross is dreadful. It's the right cross, but he executes it terribly.
Maybe he saw that Ramsey was free on the penalty spot.
And maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. But, you know, that's I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. That's the constant turmoil. Do you do the wrong thing because it's going to the wrong, because otherwise the right thing is going to the wrong player?
Yeah.
It's a constant thing in your head. You know, is it the right pass if it's to the wrong player? But I think you should always just keep playing the right pass. Let him fuck it up for you. El Mohammadi, I thought, was he had a really good start to the match as well when Villa were good. He was brilliant on the ball. His crossing was great. He was playing lovely little inside passes. Everything was disguised. And his defending was solid. He drifted out of the game, obviously, because Palace were absolutely murdering us for the last 60 minutes. But, yeah, Elmo can go up. He's a gent.
And the only other one I have going up is Courtney House. As much as his 50p head annoys me, but it's something that we... Like, it doesn't matter. Nobody else is going to score fucking corners. Like, I think he's the last person to score from a set piece for Villa on Boxing Day. So why does, like, you know, we might as well be him missing it. Somebody else is just going to miss anyway. At least he puts it dead so we can all get back and set it up. Like, how grim is that Villa have gotten to a stage where you're hoping that corners can be put dead so we can get set back up defensively? I thought he was decent, apart from the clearance that I mentioned. I thought the yellow card was harsh. You know, he's going to find it tough, but he's been out for a long time, and I thought he did well overall.
Yeah, and it's as much given out as we have done about the Aston Villa squad, particularly myself probably. Courtney House and El Mohammadi are probably the two places where you're not as concerned if there's a player out injured, because they are relatively good backup for those positions, and House was again good tonight. Like he was whenever he came in as well, whenever we needed him around Christmas, he was brilliant against Chelsea.
Yeah.
He's very, very rarely let Villa down, if at all.
Yeah. And going up, it's all relative, but Douglas Luiz, just because he had been dropping and dropping and dropping, I thought he was way better tonight, but it actually just made me notice the fact that Villa are, even when he's good, they're still missing that player to take control in the middle.
Yeah, like, I'm surprised he's going up. Like, he was okay on the ball, and he was a lot cleaner in his tackling. I don't think he barreled into the back of anybody needlessly tonight. But Jesus Christ, if the absence of that is enough to make him go up, I don't know what we're expecting from him.
He's a fucking Brazil international, mate. Going down, Tyrone Mings for crying off rather than face Saha again.
Oh God, I mean, Tyrone Mings was that actually shows you how good that House and Elmo played tonight. Whenever they were faced with Saha, they were a lot more composed than Tyrone Mings was. If anybody doesn't remember it, like, Tyrone Mings was sent off because he was just shitting himself every time Saha got the ball. He was following him all over the pitch. He was asking to be sent off all game.
Yeah, he was spooked in that match. Going down, Jacob Ramsey. Like, Jacob Ramsey's gone down a fair few times here, and I used to always caveat it with, I know I'm being harsh on him, and I know he's going to be good, but like, after a while, you have to start being good, you know? And I just don't know, like, what he's adding extra. Like, he does the right things. I can see why a manager would like him, in that he works really hard, he gets back into the right positions. He's definitely more useful than Barkley. He's not giving the ball away as much as Barkley, but he's not adding anything either to be a creative number 10. And I'm focusing on him as well because Dean Smith went out of his way after the Everton match to talk about how good Ramsey was and how good he's going to be. And like, you know, I've seen pieces of him now. He's going to be Villa's attacking midfielder next year. And, you know, that might well be, and I'm not writing him off, but I still need to see more from him. And there was a moment there, I think it was the last straw, they brought him off then after. In the 80th minute, got the ball to the edge of the box, and it just takes him far too long to get the ball under control. And by the time he shoots, it's blocked, of course it is. Like, it takes him about four touches to get out of his feet, to have a shot of his left foot, and it's blocked down. Then he gets another chance straight after to whip it in. Everybody's in the box, and it doesn't make the first... It's one of those ones where he's deeper as well, so it's a really nice angle to whip it in around the back post, but it needs a lot of purchase on it, and it hits the first person who's beside him. It doesn't even get close to the box, never mind around the back of the box, and that just frustrated me when I saw that, and I thought, like, yet again, just another game I felt has passed him by.
Yeah, I mean, Ramsey's best attribute at the minute is that he's not Ross Barkley.
Yeah.
But to be fair, Smith was right to compliment him after the Everton game, because he was good after the Everton game.
He was, yeah.
But tonight, even when Villa were good, particularly when Villa were good, he wasn't. And that just made it stand out all the more. He was the reason a lot of moves were breaking down. He wasn't, He wasn't decisive enough. He wasn't knitting the play together quickly enough. He wasn't doing any of the things that you want your number 10 to be doing. And he had a number of big chances that he didn't take, or he didn't even get the shot away properly. And yeah, he wasn't good tonight, and he was deservedly taken off, and was probably lucky to stay on the pitch for as long as he did.
And going down, white shirts. Thankfully, that's the fucking last time Villa will wear them. But they didn't win a game in the mall season. I think they got one draw. No, in fairness, they haven't been winning many games all season since the back of Christmas. So maybe it's unfair to pick out the white shirts, but it's just been a disaster. Like, they're synonymous with the Burnley defeat, and they're synonymous now with this collapse as well. Like, two just mental collapses more than anything. And I think nowadays I just don't want to see them again. I also just hate the, like, that shirt could have been really nice if they didn't have the luminous color and this faded background of nothing, like some army thing in the back of it. If that was just a cream shirt with a navy collar, it would be fucking gorgeous. But not that it matters anymore. We won't have to look at it again.
You have to stop assuming I'm as mental as you are. You can't just toss that over to me. Going down on the Andreas Weidman meter. White shirts.
Well, it's a I could never hate you meter. And I fucking despise those shirts.
Oh, Christ. So long as they never wear them with the blue socks, eh, Conan?
It's the claret socks, not the blue ones.
Oh, my mistake.
I thought you cared about this stuff as much as I do. Questions we can't answer, but probably will. How much collective crack is being smoked by the Arsenal fan base? You know, constantly linking themselves to Jack Grealish. How many more years of reality check do they really need? Get a fucking grip. Jack Grealish is not going to Arsenal Football Club. Talk about being out of your league. It's nearly stepping over the line at this point. Like, whatever happened to no means no. He's not interested in you. Take a fucking hint. Move on. You're pestering him now at this stage. And do you know what? It's not even annoying. Like, when I see Liverpool or United fans talk about Grealish, I do have that little bit of insecurity, thinking, oh, shut up. Please shut up. Stop putting that on his radar. Stop turning his head. With Arsenal, it's not annoying at all. It's just actually really fucking sad. Like, they're making up these rumors and the links themselves. It's so far away from ever being real life that it's just grim to think that that there's this cohort of people there who still think, yeah, let's get this story going as if it could ever happen. Do you remember the extras, Ricky Gervais extras, the episode of Les Dennis, and he's ringing up the celebrity spotted hotline in the tabloid newspaper to say that he was spotted. Like, he spotted Les Dennis, he's pretending he's somebody else. Spotted Les Dennis in one of these expensive stores on the high street, and the journalist replies, I don't think he can afford much around there, can he? And Les Dennis is like, well, I just fucking saw him and he's spending a shitload to put that in your paper. Like, that's Arsenal fans, like, just making up obscure nonsense that nobody will ever believe, but they're doing it to try and make themselves feel better. Imagine a day where Jack Grealish decides he wants to leave Aston Villa, the club that he loves, but he's going to do it to go to Arsenal under Mikel Arteta. Fuck me.
Yeah, I think Eddie Hearn summed it up really well when, in another context, he said, yeah, well, I want an 11-inch penis, but it's not going to happen, is it? I keep hearing them say, he's exactly what we need. Well, of course he is. You're shit, and he's class. He's one of the best players in the world. He's exactly what everyone needs.
Yeah.
But do you not think, because you need him, that's exactly why he wouldn't sign for you? It's Jack Grealish. Like, the Arsenal fans really think that if he's available, Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona aren't all going to see what they can do. Fucking Arsenal. I mean, why are they stopping at Grealish? I mean, yeah. Pick a position. Xhaka is the only player for whom it would be ridiculous for Arsenal to try to upgrade on. So he's the only player it would be prohibitively expensive to try to upgrade in that position.
Yeah, well, I think Van Dijk is exactly what they need.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. I mean, why would the best player in the league leave a rebuilding job at his boyhood club to join a rebuilding job at a club that were last competing for the title when he was a boy? Like, why would he leave such a methodical rebuilding job that has shown significant improvement year on year to join the shit show at Arsenal? And this is a rebuilding job that's been going on since 2006. And it's been a fucking disaster. It's seen Arsenal get worse every year. Every year since 2007. Arsenal's rebuilding job has seen them get worse and worse. Yeah. I mean, Arsenal fans at this stage, they're only comparing histories. That's all it is. It's history. But we don't hear fucking Leeds United fans talking about Grealish being the perfect signing for them. I mean, Leeds used to be good. Leeds are a mid-table team. It makes so much sense. It makes as much sense. But why are Leeds fans not linking themselves to Grealish? Because it's fucking ridiculous.
Honestly, it is. It's the worst thing on the internet now. And like I say, it's just so sad to think that there is that group. Like when like all those clubs you mentioned, you could add in more. You could add in PSG. You could add in like anybody, like all the big best clubs in the world, and like Chelsea. Even I don't even think he would go to Chelsea, but like so far ahead, like so far more attractive than Arsenal, and you have them trying to sort of put themselves into that group. Like as if they're one of the lads who could attract somebody as attractive as that. You are not. Like, learn to play to your strengths. And like, Jack Grealish is not interested. Anyway, it's good to laugh at all our clubs before we wrap up. We've got two more games of this shit to go. Got 49 points. The good news is that my prediction from far too long ago now that we wouldn't make 50 will probably come true. So,
oh, hallelujah. Every fucking cloud's got a silver lining.
So once Spurs and Chelsea spank us, we'll have a good celebration after the last game of the season. And we'll see you all then. I don't even know when the next game is. Who cares at this stage? We all just sort of meander along automatically towards it now. We're just like zombies at this stage, knowing what to expect. And just leave you with that stat. 4 wins in the last 18 matches. Up the fucking Villa. See you later. That wind is calling my name, and I